strength can heal that. Strength can put us back into a positive relationship with the animal, with the beast, quote unquote. And like, how do we love the beast part? Or like, how do we return it into an image of self-worth, into an image of wildness? And that for me is where, like, again, in a kind of indigenous mode of knowing, right, of relating, is very strategic because of the emphasis upon the natural world and the communion with the natural world, and seeing all animals and all plants and elements as relatives, right, is like ascribing them a personhood as well, that they, though they may not be quote unquote human, they're still people with a subjectivity that regard, like, that requires respect and care.
This is Sabrina Monarch, and this is a show about spiritual lifestyle and personal evolution. I'm an evolutionary astrologer, a clairvoyant, and a thought leader, and I started this podcast to have eclectic and impactful conversations about astrology as well as all things spiritual and personal development. Look, it's not always apparent, but I am very much a Martian. I'm an Aries sun, and because of that, a lot of how I end up framing my experience can be in wins and losses, or victories and losses. And one of the last times that I was really on the floor and having a hard time getting up off of the floor, I started to think about vitality and strength a lot. And it became a prayer in my life for increasing my life force, my vitality, and my strength. And lately, I've been in a place where I'm feeling the fruits of that. I'm having experiences of feeling stronger. I'm having some fitness breakthroughs and physically getting stronger. And so strength has been on my mind. And I had this conversation planned with my friend Christopher Marmolejo to celebrate their new book. Their book, Red Tarot, A Decolonial Guide to Divinatory Literacy. And the day of this conversation, I suggested we talk about the strength card, mostly because of this fascination that I've had with strength as a general prayer in my life, you know, and to then bring it to tarot and think about the image of the card with the woman holding a lion's mouth open while she's not dominating the lion, that she's actually unarmed or gentle, and that she is not dominating the lion, nor is she being dominated by the lion. And just that's a really evocative image and something to think about. And so the book, the amazing book that my friend just released, it is quite a magnum opus, honestly, going through these deep dives into all of the cards, every single card of the tarot. And yeah, it's been a pleasure to know about this book behind the scenes and get to hear about Christopher working on it, and then to now have it in my hands and have it as a resource to continue to get to know the cards deeper. Christopher, who I usually just call Chris, they were my first tarot teacher. I really didn't have my own relationship to the tarot for some time that I wanted to. And I was reading things in books and, you know, pulling cards and definitely looking up the meaning of every single card anytime I did a spread. And I knew that someday I wanted to have the same thing with tarot that I have with astrology, where I'm capable of forming unique insights about astrology because it's a language that I'm literate in. It's a language that I am also able to teach and share with others. And so Chris entered my life in a way of answering that prayer. I feel like a chapter turned in terms of my relationship with tarot after meeting Chris and getting to partake in their Thresholds tarot course. And just getting to enjoy the intellectual collaboration and exchange of our friendship generally. So I'm really excited to offer another episode interview with Chris. If you search the archives, all of our conversations together are super lit. It's always a good time having Chris on the show. I always love to recommend Chris's classrooms because of my own wonderful experiences, really. And their tarot class Thresholds is coming up April 14th. I feel like Chris offers such a beautiful vision of the tarot and also really supports the faculty or the facility within students to form interpretations and to, look in the mirror with the tarot, so to say. So definitely check out the course. I'm leaving the link in the notes. And as far as strength, I think I just mentioned at the beginning what inspired me to have that conversation. We really dive into the strength card in particular. We have some other episodes on this podcast where we dive into particular cards. And you can check out Christopher's book also for more deep dives on all of the cards in the tarot, and definitely check out the course. So I'm going to leave you to our conversation on the strength card, the beast, honoring the animal, what it means, the strength card in the tarot, what it's pointing to, what is the lion symbolizing. All of these things are things that we talk about in this episode. I hope you enjoy. Find where we posted about this episode on social media, on Instagram. You can find me at Sabrina Monarch and leave a comment and let us know what you thought of this episode, what moved for you about it, what touched you. We love to hear from you. And I will leave you to this episode now. I'll also just mention that Monarch Astrology, Magic of the Spheres podcast just turned 5 years old. Its birthday is April 5th. And so I asked you all on Instagram, at least, to leave a review of this podcast if it's had an impact on you. Help me celebrate the birthday, the fifth birthday of this podcast. I love to hear how the podcast has influenced you. We got a few in over the weekend that were really beautiful and sweet to read. I really appreciate your reviews on Apple Podcasts and your 5-star ratings on Spotify as well. But yeah, if you want to help me celebrate the birthday of this podcast, I would so love a review about what this podcast has meant to you. And now I'll leave you to this brilliant conversation with Christopher Marmolejo. Hey everyone, I'm back with Christopher Marmolejo of The Red Breed. We have some super fire episodes on this podcast already. And since we last podcasted together, you published a book. It's out in the world, The Red Tarot, A Decolonial Guide to Divinatory Literacy. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been magical to know you during the time where you were writing it and have like a sense of what was your process, and just to then see it like full on, like a babe, be born out into the world and be on its own with wings.
Yay, yes. All over the world now. She's here. She's arrived finally. My gosh, I can get my body snatched again now.
So, for those of people in the audience who don't know you, who haven't tuned in before, if you want to share a little bit about your practice and the book that you just published.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Christopher Marmolejo, and I am a queer diviner, author, teacher, and I have consultations within tarot and astrology, as well as curanderismo. I teach various comprehensive courses for tarot, in particular, which one is open that corresponds with my book, Red Tarot, right now, as well as some even longer year, I have a 2-year comprehensive kind of astrological deck and course and well as well. And then evergreen classes, and I write on Substack, where I have subscriber exclusive kind of free classes as well. And so yeah, I'd like to consider myself a rogue intellectual, and a part of that realization of that kind of title or mode of knowing and knowledge production has been through the writing and the birthing of this book, Red Tarot, which is a red read of the cards, and like using the cards to really model and using the work itself to explore form, to explore divination, but to do so from a decidedly and markedly indigenous lens, a decolonial lens, a feminist queer lens that is in conversation with like Black feminist thought as well.
So your work, your class was what gave me a relationship with the tarot, or like my tarot literacy, I would say. I'm still learning more all of the time, but before I met you, I was waiting for like the right teacher. I wanted to learn tarot, and then I took your class and had the most magical experience with your teaching, the curriculum, the way that things were coming to life. Like whatever we were studying that week, I was seeing it out in the world. Immediately. And that was super enchanted. And then after that, it clicked. Like now it's just been a system that I've been able to use that I can like do tarot spreads for myself and know what it means without having to like excessively look everything up. So thank you for that. And just wanted to shout that out for those of you listening. If you've been looking for a tarot education, do not sleep on this. When are these courses beginning, by the way?
So Threshold, which is the kind of comprehensive tarot course, which is so cool because yes, I have taught this class before, obviously with you very graciously, and had that exchange and field interact like syncretic field being activated. But now I have this book as the syllabus to go along with it, so it'll be my first kind of time pairing, of course, like a full own quote unquote textbook to with the course. And it opens, we start April 14th.
I want to know more about the rogue intellectual and maybe also how that ties into your decolonial approach and the indigenous approach.
I've been thinking a lot about this. I mean, always in terms of education, but especially more recently, I just got back a couple of days ago from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver and was invited to present on the work and whatnot. And my play and just the academy and how the thesis of Red Tarot, and from my own experience within higher education with my master's and teaching, it is it it's really hard to reconcile the out of formness, the displacement, the dispossession of the indigenous body, of the Black and brown, like queer body, and our modes of knowing, our ways of being and speaking. Within the institution, there's a level of appropriation that happens, or there's like the diversity, equity, inclusion, which makes it a matter of representation where we're included only to make the university look better. And then also at the same time, of course, a lot of the work, a lot of my work is informed by like academic knowledge, analysis, inquiry, scholarly language, and whatnot. And so there's a simultaneous kind of academic and anti-academic mode that I pursue. And I'm like, I call this book my personal PhD. I try and
It
I
definitely
mean,
reads like that, by the way. It is
okay.
like very rich. Very like that was my experience when I first opened it, and I would just like look to a random page. This is part of my like disenchantment of books these days in general, as if I like open to a random page, it feels like I'm like, where's the substance? I'm looking for like thick, meaty, juicy, like let's get into it. And that's what I feel like is happening on these pages where there are some sentences you just have to like go back and read again too. Like there's something like you're dropping a lot of deep codes on every page. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I when I was tired, well, it's obviously a tarot text, and I didn't want it to be sort of an introductory text because that's definitely out there, I wanted it to be for practitioners and at the same time for people who maybe disregard tarot as legitimate in any way. And there's something to lean into in that and being flippant and like the fool, right? But at the same time, model and articulate my own sensibility and my own kind of merging of high and low kind of quote unquote culture and my own depth. Like, so I
Yeah.
wanted it to be something that I also would enjoy. You know what I mean? And I like to chew on things. I like to sit there with a sentence and like, well, I need to read that a couple of times and wait. Like, if I read it in this tone, or does that, like, there's a double entendre with the placement of that word or something, you know, as well. And it's a challenge because of the academic language can be alienating for especially like the communities that I come from, you know. And yet at the same time, you know, it was so sad. I was listening to and I love Billy Ray Belcourt. And in his novel, the protagonist says something like, you know, we can't choose the people that we just like we can't choose the people we love, we can't choose the language that envelops us like a second skin. And just that has been my experience with academic language. There was like a catharsis there. And so as I wanted to be somewhat, I
Yeah.
mean, I don't know if it's your night, but also accessible and evocative emotionally and all the things. So yeah, it was quite a project. Or it is quite a
Yeah.
project.
Yeah, I'm having so many ideas right now, like where to begin. One, like I think there's something about divination itself, like the idea of these other ways of meaning that is not part of the mainstream conventional worldview that began with like the age of reason or rationalism, like this hyper rational mind that dominates a lot of like Western culture, and the security that people find in that for whatever reason, the grip that people have on it, which then can make things like astrology or tarot be like almost laughable, or it's like that's not real, you don't actually believe in that, right? Versus when you go through the gate and you have your own direct experiences with astrology or tarot, it starts to turn the reality that we've been taught in a conventional way on its head, because it brings up paradox, or it brings things that just really contradict all of that. So I kind of envision a lot of what you've presented here in some sense as like, let's take that deeper, or explain like what just happened when we went through like the gate into this other realm, right? Like what world are we leaving behind, or like what assumptions about the world are we leaving at the gate? And that process basically of deconditioning.
That's so apt, and that's such like I'm so glad that that's kind of coming through for you. When I say as well that it's kind of a personal PhD, I mean it in terms of it being a type of exit route. You know, it was like I had all this academic training. We're steeped in rationalism, like we're conditioned in certain modes. And I mean, in particular, like the Knight of Swords comes to mind, a lot of the sword suit. And what do you do with this broken colonial language that you've inherited? And it's the only one that you can speak. And so how do you fuck with the language enough in order to say something new or to arrive at a new possibility or inhabit the rupture and the juncture? And yeah, and surprise yourself and be discovered and like pursue discovery and you know, give voice to the numinous that is directing and that you're surrendering to once you do kind of leave that gate and like make a concerted effort to reunite with and reattune to, right?
How is your process writing this book?
It was enduring. It was devotional. It was unfortunately isolating. So much in terms of, you know, I think a lot of writers have to kind of say no to the world often. And at the same time, there was an internal chorus that I was calling upon, you know, and that was keeping me company, the writers and the resources and the thinkers that I cite in the work informing me and like me being like, I can't go out to dance tonight because I have a night with Jose Esteban Munoz or something, or I've got, you know what I mean? I've got to sit with Toni Morrison some more. Like she has some more to tell me, and I got to figure out how to relay that and reconcile that with like whatever card I was pairing her in conjunction or her thinking and writing in conjunction to or whatnot. And it was fast. I gave myself a really crazy deadline in terms of for the first manuscript to do so kind of in about a year. And the tarot is, there are some books that are coming out that are just on the major arcana or something, you know what I mean? Or you'll see them broken down, or you'll see them, like, if it's comprehensive, it's like maybe just a page or a page and a half for the minor arcana or something. And I wanted a full treatment of every card, and 78 cards is a lot to write about. So I was just going, as much as possible. I was just trying to, like, kind of write and write and write. And so.
How is that on your body? I don't know why I just got inspired to ask that, but I know you're Taurus rising, and so this was a process of endurance, and you wrote the book. Like, how did you kind of balance that at a somatic level?
That's a very good question. There's, I believe, a section in, I want to say, the Seven of Pentacles, where I just talk about my wrists aching as I'm writing. And I beat my deadline as well. I'm just very, like, kind of able to push myself in that way. I have my ascendant is Taurus, but it's in the Saturn decan, in the Saturn face, and there's a level of just, like, enduring and prayer and, like, remediation. I would, and at the same time, I was able to write and work from home and from coffee shops, and have enough small changes to scenery that were feeding. I listen to music always while I write. Like, that's just, like, a part of my Venusian environment making, balancing it with the kind of rigorous exercise and also, like, devotional morning readings that kind of endure. Because at the same time, it's also the Sagittarius thing, right? Where you start off with a big project, with all the gusto and the intention and, like, the desire for the end object and and whatnot, and then you're, like, midway through the marathon and you're dehydrated and you're tired and your body's like, girl, I need to take a nap. Like, what are we doing? Like, you start questioning, you start self-doubting, and you start kind of breaking down. And so it is a challenge to kind of hold the will and the body in alignment and integrity to the end goal. But at the same time, I would say that, like, being the rogue intellectual, being outside of the institution as much as possible, of course, we're always within some sort of institution, has allowed me to attune to my body a little bit more. And so that might have meant taking a nap, you know what I mean? That might have meant, like, writing. Like, typically I start very slow as a Taurus rising. I'm like I can go into the night into the night hours, and,
Yeah, I
like,
was just
when
thinking some,
I'm
like, Mariah Carey, like, nocturnal behavior. You get to choose your lighting.
And then once I'm, like, in it, I can go for a pretty long time. But it was like, oh, I'm not feeling it right now. So it's like, let me stretch, let me sing, let me take a walk, like, let me take a nap, like, let me eat, like, let me just kind of really have to attend to my body. And then, because I was pushing it for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like just translating into a text, like what you know, what you converse with, and like consolidating all of it into a body of work that now, like now this is here, like with the world, it's here with you for the rest of your life. Like there's something about downloading, like making that big download onto form so that you can like keep going or add new things to it or be able to refer back to what you've created so that you're free to teach and build upon it. I just think, yeah, it makes me think of your moon phase too, just kind of like bringing things into completion and like offering like a seed of this culminated knowledge to like carry the collective. So
Thank you.
very congratulations for creating this book.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been Thank you. Yeah, seriously, it's been a joy to be seen and kind of recognized and invited into your space, and to now talk about it. Yeah, you said that so well. Thank you.
So I wanted to talk about the strength card. I really just got the idea this morning. I pulled the card. It was a question that was really it was a really apt answer to my question, but also strength has been part of my meditations for a while. I'm about to enter a Mars perfection. We have these eclipses happening with the Aries North Node, and then we're in like a strength year numerologically. So I thought strength might also be evocative. I mean, talking about any card with you ends up being evocative, but evocative in the sense of just what do we think strength is, and what is like the more deconditioned, decolonial strength? What have we been conditioned to think strength is? But I've been thinking about, of course, too, like strength's relationship with the heart and the lion being the picture on many strength cards and on the Rider-Waite deck, and the lion having a connection to Leo and the heart, and what you wrote about strength, which I just read this morning in relationship to what I pulled, speaks to that process of having the courage to open the heart and choose the more quiet whispers of like growing goodness as opposed to these like loud voices of evil. A really evocative way of putting it too, but I think about that in terms of the strength I'm calling upon to open my heart in places I'd rather be resentful, and how loud the resentment. So if I want to say that's my inner demon or the evil or whatnot, and just that part that wants to open back up to love or like really heal that experience and that inner battle that happens. And I think that must be not just me in my relationship to that card, but when I think about like people and the struggle to live with an open heart or to overcome these things. But yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts.
Strength I've been getting a lot of feedback on strength within these past couple of days, and I love it. And it's so cool that you kind of pulled it today. So I think that, yeah, it's a very apt one for the year that we're in, as you're saying as well. But because of, for me, strength is especially a card about gender politic. And exactly as you were saying, the way that we're conditioned to us like to think about strength is I mean, in the history of the card, it's like la fuerza, right? Like it's about a physicality, it's about a masculinity, it's about the will to maim, to dominate. Men are expected, boys, you know, male bodies that are conditioned to repress their emotional receptivity, to repress their sensitivity. That's seen as a strong man. You want a strong man, right? Someone who can use abusive force to maintain the domination of women, thereby the earth. And you know, that in extension is a colonial order, right? And so strength, I mean, in the history of the card as well, there's sometimes you would see the brute man with his big biceps and like a big weapon killing the lion in confrontation with the lion. You get to Samson, is like our kind of archetypal superhero of sorts, who was sublimating his faith actually into a physical strength in order to destroy the temple of idol worshipers, false believers, quote unquote. Right. And he kind of destroys the pillar and it comes crashing down and kind of kills himself. And there's something there, but in some other instances, you see Hercules with the Nemean lion, right? And it's Leo, and is this Leo story, and it's this achievement of a masculinity, achievement of the hero by the domination of the natural world, of the feminine world, of the lion, the wild. And so he's it becomes the rug, it becomes the beast, and it's such like an intense image. Or Samson is on his way to court Delilah, and there's a lion in his path, you know, and he has to defeat the lion in order to win, you know, in order to win the object of his desire. And so you see that now in modern, like with the Tiger King, you know, and it's always men and masculinity and patriarchy trying to put these big cats, you know, into cages in order to affirm their own masculinity. And that becomes seen as something strength, like this kind of zoo impulse and this like exoticizing, you know, like conquering of the world, right? Whereas then we get this other line within the trajectory and the history of the images with the maiden or the virgin. And when the Romans were conquering the Catholics, they threw this virgin woman down into the Colosseum pits, to be fed on for entertainment by the lions in the Colosseum. And once they saw her and her holiness, they were like, started licking her feet, kind of very fetishistically. And they're like, she's too holy. Like, we're not gonna eat her. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we're not gonna chomp on her. We're not gonna chew on her, And I think that that's, again, like, opens up. And now what we see much more regularly
I'm
is,
sorry, is this a myth? Is this a real historical story? Like, I feel like very silly for asking that, but I just have not heard this before about the virgins and the Colosseum.
there, I am. I will look up, perhaps while we're talking, or like I can get it to you. Absolutely. I'm forgetting the name right now of the saint. It's in reference to like a female saint who this myth or whatnot or this story or this lore like
Yeah.
surrounds
But
for sure.
isn't it like, I feel like there is a way that, like, if you're walking through the woods, most animals leave people alone, but some people have this effect where birds will land on them, or like they can converse with animals out in the wild, so to speak. And
Right.
there's a quality of the person that can talk to animals that
Yeah,
way that,
absolutely.
yeah, I'm curious, like, what you're. I don't want to interrupt that trajectory that you were on, by the way. So if
It's
there's
all right. No,
more
it's all
there, I
right.
want to keep hearing it. And I'm also wondering what your take on the lion is. I know you just did a course on like reading the animal. So what the lion means in this card.
Oh my gosh, the lion is so much. One, as I said, it's kind of like a transmogrification of indigeneity by being a symbol of quote unquote the wild, of female sexual power and sexual autonomy. It's the pussy, you know what I mean? You see, like, and the Queen of Wands in particular, a lot of cats associated with her, depending on the deck. It might be a small cat, it might be a big cat, and so you kind of get like a court version of the strength card in itself. It's the body, as you're saying. I think it's the force of our triggers. It's the overwhelming emotional natural force that threatens to swallow us whole, in our rational conditioned mask like
Yeah.
patriarchal mind tries to suppress, but like we need to be in relationship to in order to love or to kind of find that strength overall to realize a different strength.
I watched Pleasantville recently. Have you seen it?
No, I have not.
It's a very, I don't even know how to begin to describe it, but there's definitely a lot of themes about race in it. There's basically this world where everyone's in black and white. And suddenly, with the awakening of like deeper emotions and feelings, some people start to become like colored in. And the town, some people are like getting really excited, like the people that are coming to life and starting to be Technicolor. Some people want to join that, but then there's this conservative faction of society that begins that's like really resistant and starts segregation in the town. And there begins to be like this whole dynamic within the town. And eventually, sorry, like spoilers and whatnot, there's like a court scene where this judge that's putting someone on trial for basically having people end up in Technicolor, the person who's in color yells at the judge, like, this is inside of you too. Like, these emotions, everything that you're projecting onto us is bad. It lives in you too. And he like starts to get the person, the judge, enraged enough that the judge yells and then he fleshes out into color also. And I think there's something about the domination part, where like there's a repression of emotion, but then a domination versus recognizing the forces within.
Absolutely. I think that what happens when you kind of repress a wild animal nature, or a wild, like the part of us that is wild because we are of this earth. When you have that internal colonization, it gets kind of muted and flattened and only understood. Or, I mean, men, the only emotion that they're allowed to express is anger, is violence, and that comes from like a distortion via the repression. Whereas unlearning that and being in communion, like the strength the maiden is the mistress of animals. You know what I mean? She can be, and there's like a whole host of goddesses who are like have this kind of queen of nature status, right? She tames the lion by love, by gentleness. You know, it's like this power of disarmament, you know, that like real strength is. It is the soft voice of intuition that can hear amidst the loud hate and resentment or anger or whatnot, and hear the wound, who can hear the intimacy, who can hear the desire for connection. You know, there's freeing that, taking yourself off of the leash, you know, and that can be hard for people when you've been conditioned to a cage your whole life, when you've been conditioned to cage others your whole life. How do you then, like, what then becomes the barometer of what's safe or what's not safe? You know, and so I see strength as like this card that can teach us about exploring the wild. And I think it's very apt, kind of where we began, as well as like this rogue, quote unquote, intellectual of like doing so beyond the bounds of like what's legitimized, what's acceptable, what's like, you know, who's the quote unquote scholar, who's the intelligent one, like needing to have the title, needing to have whatever, whatever, right? Within like the bounds. But it's like once you step beyond, once you go into the wild and forge your own path, you do have to have a lot of faith. You have to be able to sublimate the faith. There is a physicality implied by the strength card, in terms of walking the path, you know, in terms of enduring, like where you're like, it starts to get cold at night and you get scared by all these animals and things that you've never seen before. But then you learn to live in the forest. You maybe become that witch in the woods, you know what I mean? Or whatnot. And you learn to speak with the rivers and like, and to the birds and to the cats and totally. So I really do also feel that way with animals, like just like we see each other, like they're like, we, oh, you're cool, like you're not gonna harm us, you know what I mean? And so like I don't really have a bad at all relationship with like most or any animals, you know, just off the bat. But maybe that's another note.
Yeah, no, I'm curious about that because the image I think on the strength card of like the virginal one or like this kind of saintly figure with the lion is really evocative because there is like this connection that's being made between something like I don't know if holy is the right word, but something very holy within and then the primal or the wild. And I think that when it comes to like the heart or strength, like just being able to be with one's own body, the triggers, as you brought up, like all of that, like to be able to be in relationship with that as opposed to dominating it. You know, I think like, for a while with like nervous system stuff, like I felt like the narrative was like regulate your nervous system, like learn how to control it or optimize it. And then the conversation opened up a little bit more to like learn how to ride the waves of activation. Like you can be alive, you don't have to be regulated. So the relationship when it comes to like passion versus having to be manicured a certain way. And strength that it takes to be able to do that versus the type of strength that is just about the caging or putting things in a box and then appearing a certain way. Like all of that's been kind of managed.
That's so, that's absolutely that for me. Kind of marks the distinct, or like gets in the relation between gender, which we were talking about, to the sexuality component of the virgin and of patriarchal restriction, again, of female pleasure and sexuality, you know, to being like the virgin and being like the chastity belt, right? Chastity is a synonym of like holiness, right? Of the virginal one. But then as you were talking, I was also just thinking about like literally nature. You know, nature is not placid and easygoing. It's not always a sunny day in the forest. Like it, like we know this. We know that there's earthquakes. We know that like Mother Nature rages, you know, that she weeps, that she delights. Like there's like a whole spectrum of like her wildness that you can't reject any part of it when you are committed to an unconditional loving and self-worth and inclusion within it. And so like that's the same. And I think a big part of healing strength is pussy work, like is really to like pop, 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 pussy, like is to like, you know, kind of and like scream and have like erotic dancing and like have liberatory sex and like to do a lot of work to heal the puritanical stigma that we have towards self-possessed sexuality. You know what I mean? There's no such thing as a slut. Like a slut is a term of a like that's an invention by a patriarch. Like that's like a whore is not a real thing. Like you know what I mean? Like these are like this is not like that's an invention of misogyny, right? And so I mean people embrace that in order to find some like rebellion and like push back against, but at the same time again it's like it, again it's an invention of misogyny in order to shame the woman who whose pussy can tame any kingdom, you know what I mean? Like who is like she's like you will bow before me and like look at my feet because like I have kingdom between my legs, like you know. Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's a sexual politic to strength as well, for sure.
Yeah, there's so much I feel like investment in separating people from their pleasure, from their bodies, and the reclamation of that, or of like actually being able to feel oneself and feel one's full aliveness
Right.
changes the game. Like it's so much harder to control people that have access to their pleasure and feel the
Right.
truth inside of their own bodies. Yeah.
You can like I feel like we also do also feel that like our sexual energy, our erotic energy is like when it becomes activated, it overwhelms all of us. Like, I mean, there's times where we're like run through by it as well. And so it does take not letting it again be violently destructive, you know, like the strength maiden figure, she is taming the lion, she's unarmored, you know what I mean, she's not there with a sword but she's unafraid, so she shares a language and she knows how to let it be off a leash and at the same time like know who's in charge, you know what I mean, and that and she, her is representative of like a holy spirit. And so it's like your sex is holy, you know what I mean, your orgasm is holy, like your body is holy, like explore not just its pleasure, but you're going to have to get in touch with the grief stored within it, within the all the shit emotion stored within it that needs to be processed, and like again, be in relationship with it from a container of love in an overarching sense, in order to access the fullness of feeling. And feeling is not just, of course, like pleasurable feeling, though it's that's a big part of it as well.
No, yeah, that reminds me of some semi-recent experiences of like sitting in the field of my own desire and like having a different relationship with it. Of this time, I'm letting it wash through me, but I'm not gonna let it go into some kind of control or grip pattern, trying to like make the situation feel safe by knowing all the like details or knowing what's about to like what the plan is, to just sit in the activation and feel the aliveness of that and the total surrender of I know what I want and I can hold myself no matter what happens. Like that was a big transition for me in some sense because I wasn't thinking of strength or the strength card when that was happening, but I feel like that's kind of what was shifting of just like that relationship with my animal self and like not falling into old patterns of control with it. And that felt amazing to come out of.
Absolutely, that's a human. That's like you know, well, then I have words, but like a humanizing process or a consciousness kind of raising process or a liberatory one, and thinking again about your question of like from a decolonial perspective, like what is the lion? Well, when you as a people have been compared to, and dehumanized by being called an animal, for generations and generations, to thereby heal the relationship, like that can divorce and alienate, and like make you want to reject any kind of animal relation. Because of that racist history that's used to dehumanize people and disregard them of the respect and rights, you know, thereby just needed. Strength can heal that. Strength can put us back into a positive relationship with the animal, with the beast, quote unquote. And like, how do we love the beast part? Or like, how do we return it into an image of self-worth, into an image of wildness. And that for me is where, like, again, in a kind of indigenous mode of knowing, right, of relating, is very strategic because of the emphasis upon the natural world and the communion with the natural world, and seeing all animals and all plants and elements as relatives, right, is like ascribing them a personhood as well, that they, though they may not be quote unquote human, they're still people with a subjectivity that regard, like, that requires respect and care. And so I want to, like, what I think we're naming or like exploring is different valences between understanding our own body and our own emotions and somatics, as the lion, but then literally like the animals in the natural world as, of course, the lion itself as well. And like, how do you maybe go out into the world or into the forest or into the trees or wherever natural, like wherever and it's all of course out there, but some places it's just so concrete, like, so the cityscape, right, it's like that can be harder to feel connected to the natural world. But I do want, but like, there's that, like, it's not just a metaphor, is what I'm saying. You know?
Yeah. The idea of comparing someone to animal as an insult is so far away from me. It's like someone that doesn't have a connection to their animal is like that to me is worse. Like that sense of being so not connected to one's aliveness and so like mechanical and having like that disconnection, like that. Yeah, so I'm just thinking about the insult of person as animal is like that doesn't even make sense. But
Right.
that's like the yeah, I don't know about that one, like how to explain that. Do you know what
I
I mean?
think absolutely. I mean, I think it's just maybe your own, like you're saying, like your own mode of thinking. Sometimes it's like can be jarring, which I think is probably a good indicator of your thinking, right? Like that's unnatural to you because, yeah, it is unnatural, of course. It's like there's an anthropomorph, or like there's a elevation of the human as well, like there's a bias to, like, just there's an inherent disregard also of the animal when you're doing so as well. And that's something I do talk about in my Auguring the Animal course. And like elephants, like circus elephants, they dress them up in like tutus and make them stand on their feet and perform, and like the mockery was like the animal playing human and like a mockery of their intelligence. And like, when we know elephants are like there are many animals I feel that are like so much smarter than humans, like, you know what I mean? And or shouldn't even be comparative, but at the same, like, there's just a comment on the human being the smartest, and like a disregard of animal intelligence and animal ways of being as well, implicit in that. And that's, why am I forgetting the term off the mind? There, it's speciest. Right. It's like a species,
Yeah.
it's species. Yeah.
And it feels like the idea that the intellect is primary, or that's like the good thing to rule life with, I mean, is the issue in some sense. Like there's this
Right.
lack of feeling, this lack of connection that has people doing studies on whether or not animals have feelings, as opposed to just being able to sense that. And it's
Right.
like that divorced consciousness from the embodiment, from intuition, and like having to go through these channels of logic and the scientific method and all of that, and just like what that kind of consciousness creates in the world, essentially. And how, in order to live that way or be in that type of consciousness, one has to essentially cage a part of themselves, or it's been caged for so long that. You know,
Yeah.
it has.
Sorry, we're gonna, I don't mean to cut you off right at then.
It just has me thinking too about when people have like had enough, like when people really get like angry about their circumstances, there's that sense of something is getting unleashed, like this isn't acceptable anymore. And like that relationship with anger or the solar plexus, and how these extreme emotions can be a signal that something is breaking through the conditioned world.
You gotta break the cage. I think that I live in San Diego, and SeaWorld, unfortunately, is of course part of the local scene. And I just think of the whales biting bitches, like eating them, playing with them, and like them rebelling. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they're rebelling, and like even across, like even in the wild ocean, they're rebelling. But especially it was like seen as like this horror thing, but it's like you have this massive majestic animal in this small tub for entertainment. Again, like an ex like another pivot on the zoo, right? And so when we're talking about strength, we're talking about the unleashing and the freeing of the feminine, of the sexual, of the feeling, as well as, you know, imagining a world without cages or without zoos or without, you know, dominating and colonizing animals. Like, not only colonizing people by ascribing them as subhuman by comparing them to animal, but then also literally colonizing animals into like these miniature fields of entertainment and these miniature worlds, these simulacrums for people to go in and like gawk at and look at and like act as if they're there to perform, when they're like, I'm a majestic ass whale. Like, why do you trap me in this tub? I'm gonna for sure, you know, eat you, right? Like, I'm gonna for sure like fuck you up. Like, and that to me is when you've had enough. And there is a, you know, that's a definite component, I think, of strength, like the strength needed to get free. And that's not always a clean, you know, non-violent process either. You know, sometimes you do have to like really go through hell and be willing to bleed, you know. And generally, I mean, I think about the card as well as again, a disarming strength, like a disarming strength and voice of goodness. I mean, when I think about the book, it's the project of literacy, and that soft still voice, you know, versus like the song in Hat of Evil that is just like incessant and never present and like loud in order to draw attention. You know, goodness is not interested in evil. As I say, it's not like it does not deny evil, nor its necessary confrontation or the impact of its ravage, but it does deny evil an audience. It simply focus, it's like a, it's a discipline of re attuning the focus and the consciousness. You know, I
Beautiful.
think, thank you.
What was your process like for this card, for writing the book?
I really actually did enjoy writing about this. Somewhere very challenging in terms of just finding kind of the right key or register, as well as like the right perspective. I felt that once I had kind of the theoretical vantage into the card, that adds like a new dimension. That was half of the battle, and then at this, and then the other end was like the language itself, in order to beautifully stage that idea. I opened it with an epigraph from an own show. What is it? Greenleaf, and there, it's like this, which I just laugh because it's like a Black Lady Church show. You know what I mean? And like very much. It's a whole, it's which is the whole thing, you know. In strength, again, there's like this holy religious faith component to the card, very much embedded within it. And it, and like the part that I quote is this woman is the who was the wife of the pastor who had wanted to speak at the church, who wanted to speak to her gospel, her choir, her congregation, and only until her husband died did she deliver this truly stirring speech that like moved me to tears to hear. And it's just like still something so evocative. And she's describing like, make me something new. You know what I mean? And so like I felt that carried the charge of like this holy woman who is dealing with patriarchy, but also again this history of enslavement and using faith as a means to project a voice of goodness, of inspiration, of hope even beyond loss. And I thought about Toni Morrison. I thought about Audre Lorde, who I do quote in those. Like, I've taught that in the course. She's always kind of been one of my key models, and some of her thinking with strength and the strength kind of idea is that once you accept everything about yourself, nothing can be used against you to deny you, to diminish you, to use it against you, right? Like you become alive, you take the feathers out of your enemy's arrows and their arsenal, you know, and that type of self-acceptance, that type of like brutal self-interrogation and like unconditional love, which sounds flowery perhaps to some, or you hear that often, but in practice it is truly holy and hard, but that it's something that allows you to walk with dignity where others may try and throw you to be feasted upon for entertainment, you know, because they judge you, because they call you a whore, because they call you an animal, because they're trying to conquer you, you know. And so it takes like so I will say with this card overall is pretty much Black feminist thought, Black theological thought, guided my mode. And then when I started thinking about just like goodness versus evil, which it also kind of helped, I think, to articulate the ideas within voice and attention and subjectivity and kind of the literacy component being drawn forth. So.
I remember that part from your course about strength being connected to accepting parts of ourselves that others might try to use against us as a way where you de-arm the opposition through that self-acceptance, and there's a power reclamation in that. And I feel like that's been there's something about, I mean, maybe even the Leo connection here to like visibility, that to have like pride about oneself in the world, there may be like, or there often is oppositional audience, or people that would like to tear you down. And if you have a part that has shame, it sinks right into that. So the strength part of loving ourselves in these places that we're receiving negative feedback from the environment or from the cultural conditioning, perhaps for something that's fairly internally true, like something that there's actually nothing wrong with. But for whatever reason, it's been part of the cultural programming to alienate that particular part of oneself.
Yeah, that makes me, I mean, when you say all that, it makes me think of Sula in particular, which is a Toni Morrison novel and the name of the protagonist. And like, there's a, and she like comes back to her hometown and she's just like this kind of loose cultured woman who like really doesn't give a fuck about what other people think about her. She sleeps with like her best friend's man, and her best friend was like all messed up about it. And she was like, girl, I didn't kill him. Like I just slept with him. Like it was, she was just very much like she refused to be bowed down, you know, despite other people's like consistent judgments and projections upon her, on herself. And she like moved very, she was subversive, of course, but like just because it is subversive or transgressive does not like there's that's not synonymous with like right, or like especially within a dominating culture. It's like, as I always say, the good to fail at empire. And so I think that like the more that you become self-possessed, the more you will piss people off, you know, because they're gonna want to put a collar on you. They're gonna want to like cage you. So you have to know that as well.
Yeah, and I guess it shows people where they are living by certain rules, and then they're appalled that someone else is just defying those rules. Where did you get the inspiration for the goodness versus like the loudness of evil part of it?
From listening to Toni Morrison in particular and some of her talks and her talking about a community, a religious community, I will say it's like escaping me exactly what faith, but who had suffered from like a mass shooting and just got to work. Like they weren't there to capitalize and televise trauma. They weren't trying to lionize the violence of evil. They like they their non-response And their response to their action of commemorating their dead, of trying to heal the community, was louder than, going on like Channel 9 or whatever and like having this whole diatribe and this whole spiel of condemnation. They were simply focused with their faith to do good, to heal, to bolster themselves, to return and like fortify themselves. I think of this card as well as the fortification needed within the integrity of spirit against a dominating culture that is done with prayer. And for me, prayer can be loud, but it's like it's a more silent language act in that it's more private versus, maybe something more obviously external, which we see kind of constantly that is broadcast, which is all this violence and like hate and judgment of people and others and whatnot. It's like all the praying that you do in private, I think, is a silent, quote unquote, language, or it's a more subtle, softer literacy. And I think, and I think of Jupiter being at the heart of Leo, which this card is syncretized to Leo, as we've mentioned, against the malefics, right? Like Saturn with the cage, and dealing with that, dealing with the harsh voice and the stage fright and like the light that can be used to expose yourself. And then you're like, shit, I'm exposed right now, or I'm vul and exposure is vulnerable. And so we deal with being made vulnerable, whether in the act of love or in like, this is something I would love to do. Let me take the stage and sing or perform or like step out and like claim this passion. And then Mars at the other end, where again, there's something of a dominating masculinity that we've already spoke to as well. And there's also like a defense that we also spoke to against like self-acceptance being like, you can't hate me. You could try to hit on me, but I love myself. So good luck with that, because like that shame has already been processed. And at the heart is Jupiter, the planet of faith, of liberation, and I think that for me is like really, really key to the card, or to the Leo trajectory itself as well.
Yeah. I'm feeling something like relational about this card too, in terms of the capacity to hold people's experience or like hear people as opposed to invalidating what people are saying or getting defensive. Just like how disarming it can be to like come to someone with something and then feel them receive it. And that is like kind of a relational remediation for the strength card. I don't know, like that.
Yeah, I love that.
That accepting that part of us and accepting it in other people too, the activated, the triggered.
Right, because it's yes, absolutely, that parts of
You know, because it's like the difference between like, babe, you're being too emotional, like, don't worry about it. Like, just relax versus like, holding someone.
Yeah, and that you can understand that people have beasts once you like it's like not the only it's like everyone not the world is full of beasts, and why it's like, you're also a beast, like you also have your own beast. So as you sit with your own and you accept your own, you're less afraid of the panther, of the cougar, of the eagle, or whatever other beasts that other others may have within them as well. So I think that that's totally apt, and I do talk about that concept. I don't know if it's within the strength, like I'm forgetting if it's within the strength side, but I definitely, that's somewhere in the book, we'll say, where I kind of like, if for me, I something of the cups potentially is coming to mind. Maybe the Eight of Cups, perhaps, or the King of Cups. I don't know, but, or the Knight of Cups. I'm sorry, sorry to go through. I'm like,
It
I'm just
does all feel like
brainstorming.
good reads of those cups, like
Like the holding, you know what you're saying? Like the making space and the like receptivity towards, yeah.
yeah.
Very apt.
Is there anything you'd like to share about your classes, the ones that are coming up?
Yeah, thresholds. So thresholds is definitely again, like I'm so excited to teach it again with like having taken some time, and because I'm interested in continually developing new courses and like running through kind of the slate that I do already have. I may only teach this like once a year, maybe once or twice a year, just depending. It's 11-week comprehensive course where we kind of follow the structure of the book, where we group the major and the minor numerically in order to uncover themes across the suit, and so that you're learning comprehensively versus just like the more quote unquote standard route. And I do so because there is a logic and an organizing principle there, but I think that that more closely resembles the way that we do read tarot, in that like you don't really read tarot and it's like ace through 10. It's like you read it and it's like an array of cards, like you know what I mean? It's like a kind of chaotic array that you have to understand the relation to, and so the book and the course organization models that. And it's great if you're an astrologer. We cover the cards of the chart, as I like to say, that we form a decanic wheel with the whole deck, so that you can kind of understand, your placements in the tarot and how certain cards are like personal cards. We go over shadow keys. We do group reading. Like it promises to vivify your divinatory practice with tarot, to make it intimate and also politicized. It's evergreen. There's like recorded lecture material. There's the audiobook version of my book that you can get as well. It's just really great to kind of like really break down the concepts so that you're kind of understanding them. And then I also have, so that again, we begin April 14th. There's payment plans available. I've reduced the price from like earlier iterations. And I think that it's great if you have been enjoying Red Tarot, you want to ask questions, you want to learn how to read Red. And then I have an animal course. I have a course tomorrow, so obviously this won't air in time, but like again, a free subscriber series that I'm doing on the planets and their decans. So Mars has six cards, and we're covering those six minor arcana cards and pairing them to the nature of Mars. There's decans that got really popular recently, out of nowhere. I think that's really cool. I love the decans. And so that's a little bit of a change because I do have two full year courses, like one of a decan walk where we're looking at the ancient translations, against texts that I paired them to. And that course very much informed the writing of this book. I was like, oh, I've already done a lot of this work of like thinking about the Virgo cards, the 8, 9, 10 of Pentacles with Jose Esteban Munoz's brown theory, like the theory of brownness and like a brown world, or the Leo cards with Ricky Tucker and ballroom culture, and house and gayness and whatnot. And then there's a year two, excuse me, in which you write the way, in which students thereby present their own deck and walk and their own writing or artistic material. And I will say that one of my students, well, all of them are brilliant, but one is making her own images for each of the decans. And I really hope it becomes like a deck or shown in a gallery because they are so evocative and amazing. Like they are just truly oracular and give me chills every time I see and she presents on them. And then we also get into advanced timing techniques, as well within the chart and like Vedadia and et cetera, et cetera. So I have a whole lot of options. I have a lot of offerings, but again, like I hope you'll join me in Thresholds and become a subscriber to kind of tune into these free options as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved in class just learning how to practice interpretation and doing that as a group and the way that you really read, like in all senses of the word, like the way that the cards then go with the person's question or what the person has presented and the way that you combine that and model that type of seeing with tarot. It was amazing to practice like giving interpretations. I'm very confident with interpreting in terms of astrology, but tarot was like a new bridge to build. So that was like fun to get to do that and to be in a community of people doing that. And just like the warmth of your classroom is really felt.
Thank you. Thank you. I miss having you there. Absolutely. And I
Yeah.
feel the same way about when I was in your containers.
Yeah.
It's a communal experience as well. Totally. And I think that that's, I found out my book is being taught to PhD students, And so I will say, you'll get a great education. Like I'm a trained educator, and yet again, existing outside of the institution, funny, accessible, I serve a look when we come to class too. It's like we have a good time, but we go there, we cry, we like uncover all the shadow shit and imagine a free liberatory world through learning how to read tarot. So I hope y'all join me. Yeah.
Yeah, Uranus in Capricorn on Cafe Astrology, I think it is, or astro.com. One of them talks about like very serious about your education. And if you don't get it through an institution, you'll make it yourself. Like, they're just like, this is, yeah, rogue intellectual, Uranus in Capricorn. Like, that was like really niche, but that just came to mind.
That. So apt. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for sharing and congratulations again on your book. For people that are listening, go find the Red Tarot. Go find Chris. All the links will be in the notes. Yeah, you won't regret learning from Chris for sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.